What up, everyone? We're here. And we're with a special lady. She's caught off guard by how abruptly we just started this. But we're here with Lindsay Aronson. And I pronounced that right, correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And we're just peering out into the snowy wonderland of Boulder, Colorado here in September. Casual winter snow or summer snow. And Lindsay's going to talk to us all about all the ways that she benefits the world.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So you went to school to be a recreational therapist, correct?
Close. Not quite.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell us what you did get formal training in?
Okay. So is this a good distance?
Yeah. Or you can hold it.
Okay. So I went to grad school for clinical mental health counseling with a concentration in wilderness therapy. And essentially, yeah, in undergrad, I was studying psychology and feeling like I wanted to benefit the world by helping people in nature. And so I went through this whole really intensive program, Naropa University, and we basically learned outside. Most of our curriculum was learning outside and learning how to help people outside. Since graduating, I've shifted my focus a little bit, and I've done one legit wilderness therapy job in Oregon, which was quite intense, but also awesome.
So you're in Oregon helping kids who otherwise wouldn't really experience nature because they don't have access to like transportation to get into nature, or like the ability to, like, maybe their parents have to work and can't take off to get them to nature, maybe. And so basically you would bring them into nature.
Yeah, so the program was, I guess it's like there's a lot of privilege in nature. I think, we worked with kids who just lived in the inner cities and maybe they didn't have a lot of money. Also, going into nature, being a Black person isn't always safe.
And so, especially as we've seen over the past few months.
Right. Being a Black person in general isn't always safe. And so a lot of times Black people have said they don't feel super safe in nature, or they don't feel super included in like this very white industry of hiking and backpacking. And, you know, it's not super diverse. So there's a lot of reasons, I guess. But what we did, it was a 2-week program. Everything was grant funded, and so these kids just had to show up, and we took them into nature. We did, the first week was like some sort of training camp, so we taught them all about how to use backpacks, how to hang bear hangs, which is like putting your food into trees so bears don't come and eat them. Not the kids, the food. Also, yeah, and then after that, we went on like a 7-day backpacking trip through Oregon, and it was a lot of the kids' first times backpacking.
Did they get to keep the gear afterwards?
No, I think they gave it back. I think they got to keep a few things.
That's awesome.
It was really beautiful, and it was really hard in a lot of ways. It's just, yeah, I don't want to talk bad about the program.
No, you don't have to. But cool.
But so some things could have been more organized.
So you experienced that, like, deep dive into nature using what you learned in school, and then you decided you want, not based on that, but just something in life inspired you to go down a different path?
Yeah, so I think what happened is I was working in my third year in my internship, working with a place called Bridge House in Boulder, and was doing therapy and lots of different therapy and therapeutic groups, working with people who were experiencing homelessness or coming out of prison. And I really, really love working with that population because I think they're some of the least respected people in society, and they're also the most deserving and most in need. So I love working with them, and also because of the system and because of the way, yeah, just because of the way the program worked, it was really exhausting and really tiring to be always fighting up against just these battles of, like, the system of how people who are homeless are treated and legislation and the city of Boulder and all this stuff. And so it was very rewarding and very exhausting. And so after I graduated, I decided I needed to travel because it's something I always wanted to do. So I went and spent a lot of time in Mexico, mostly Mexico, a little bit Guatemala and Costa Rica. And when I came back, when I was there, actually, I kind of just had this realization, like, maybe I don't have to be a therapist. Maybe I can help the world in other ways that aren't so draining for me, like ways that give back to me rather than me just giving kind of to the world. And it's not that therapy didn't, you know, give back to me, but it was just more draining. So when I got back, I started teaching Spanish and I started doing sex and relationship coaching.
And did you go through specific training to be a sex and relationship coach, which is what you are now?
Yeah. So when I got back, I still kind of didn't know what I was going to do because I was away for a very long time and was very deep in my travels and in my own self and learning things and meeting people and everything. And so when I got back, I was a little disoriented and needing to ground. And so just so happened that there was this sex and relationship training in Boulder, like basically the weekend that I was getting home. So I was like, oh, that would be a really cool thing to do. Felt like if I was gonna continue with therapy, maybe it would be good to find a niche in, you know, something more, a little more enticing, like sex.
Mm-hmm. Generally liked for the most part.
So I did a really awesome training in that, and then another training a few weeks later with Dr. Chris Donahue. He's kind of a big name in the industry. He's been on Oprah or something. And then a few months after that, I did another training. So I've done three sex and relationship therapy trainings since. And then the coaching came into play because I realized that sex and relationship coaching is something I was totally overqualified for, because I was basically trained to be a sex and relationship therapist, which, if people don't know the difference, therapy just goes a little deeper into trauma and, you know, past experiences with family, hard experiences, a lot of pain, mental health struggles. Whereas coaching stays a little bit more surface level. It's not very black and white, but with the coaching, I tell people ahead of time, we're not going to be really working and deep diving into like mental health issues or trauma. We're going to be working more with like changing beliefs that they may have about themselves, or beliefs about how they need to show up in relationship, working with shame, working with sexuality, gender. And it's, yeah, for me, really just about giving people permission and validating them and how they naturally are.
Very interesting. And Lindsay and I did a Q&A on this little fundraiser I did called Habithon, which benefited Habitat for Humanity. And we got some really interesting questions, and it was really cool to see Lindsay just in her element. And I posed one question that I framed as someone else asking. But we're going to also do a live stream on her Facebook, and it will be on my personal Facebook too. So if you guys want to submit questions, you can DM me them, or I'll post information on how you can submit those questions. You're going to have to submit them fast because this live stream is happening tomorrow, and we'll post the time whenever we figure it out. But should I maybe ask you a question?
Sure.
Okay. So one thing, and I think, sorry, Mom, for tuning in, but like one issue that I kind of have is that I think some people like view like sex as this like dirty thing. And like my mom can't, like, she doesn't want to watch anything that really even has like sexual jokes in it. Mm. Even like New Girl is too risque. Mm. So it's like hard for us to find a TV show that we can like watch and both enjoy, because we like to watch shows since we live so far apart, we start shows at the same time. Mm. Yeah, so that's a cute thing that we do. But like, I don't know how you can even answer this, but like, I assume there's like a pretty widespread belief that like having sex, I mean, I know that many people believe that like having sex outside of marriage is wrong, and that like having casual sex is wrong. So I don't know, do you work to like change those beliefs? Like, because you, maybe it is what that person needs. Like, maybe she doesn't care to change, but like, do you have any insight on that? Like, how can we, I don't know, anything.
Anything help? Yeah. Well, I'd be really curious, maybe, you know, if like, did something happen for your mom to make her have those beliefs, or did she grow up very religious?
Yeah, she's just super religious.
And she is super religious.
Yeah, currently. And then I also think, like, it seems like people are more open, at least how what we can tell. We weren't really alive back in the day, so we don't know how media was, like, portraying sex. Mm-hmm. But, like, now everyone's more open with, like, how they feel and, like, what their goals are. And, like, so I think maybe that's just, like, a shift that people from back in the day weren't ready for. I don't know, dude.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, definitely religion has a huge, huge, huge impact on people's views of sexuality. There's so much shame and sin around it. And so a lot of times people come into religion for a certain reason too, unless they're born into it. But a lot of people born into it also like escape it kind of thing.
Yeah.
But people I feel who are, again, this is just kind of my understanding of it, people who are deeply invested in religion kind of as a choice, or especially religions that are very shameful of sex, it's definitely serving them in some way. So it's like the religion is serving them in some way and then disserving them maybe in other ways. But it's hard, I think, for a lot of people that are so devoted, such as, I don't know, Catholicism or some types of Christianity. And it's like their devotion is going towards this religion as a whole that also is happening to shame all these other things that maybe deep down they don't feel are shameful, but it gets confusing to pull apart pieces. You know, a lot of people who are very devoted, it's not like they're like, oh, I'm devoted to this part but not another. I think more, you know, spiritual people do that. But people who are fully invested in, it's like you're in or you're out. And I think that's a lot of the ways like the church wants people to feel. So anyway, there's a lot of fear and fear and guilt and shame. And so if I were to be working with someone who had those beliefs, I would just really try to examine, I think there's a way to pull apart what is yours and what is not yours. Like, what, like, you can feel it when you tune in to, like, when I lead sort of, like, mindfulness practices, you can start to, if you start to have more body awareness and feeling into, like, what it feels like to have your own belief, you can sort of tease apart, like, is this mine? Is this really what I believe? Or is this just something that's been taught to me and I'm adapting because I feel like I have to?
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of, like, if she... Change only happens if people want to change.
Yeah, and I'm not saying she should change. It's just...
No, yeah. Just if she wants to.
Yeah. And she doesn't want to.
No. So then so there's I'd no say reason probably not.
Yeah.
Possible.
Okay, well, how about I reframe the question to, I was also raised, like, super religious, and I still feel that I'm, like, spiritual, but I don't, and it's hard for me sometimes to, and I feel like I may have already asked you this on our Q&A, I'm not sure, but for me to not feel guilty, like, I'm going to have to just tell my mom to not listen to this episode, like, even sometimes I feel guilty if I, like, make out with someone, and I don't actually feel that that's bad, like, deep down inside. Like, mm-hmm. I know that I can, I'm, like, a free woman, I can do whatever I want, like, and I should be able to experience life to the fullest, I should be able to do that and enjoy it, but there's something deep down that it just makes me feel like I've done something, like, kind of wrong, and I don't feel, like, sad and guilty in that way. I don't know, it's really hard to explain, but I think this is just based on, like, how I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I wish I could, like, unlearn that thought process.
Well, if we work together, we could work on that. I think it's just, there are things, yeah, we all have things deeply ingrained in us that affect our beliefs. And so it's like, I know I have things that, like, on a conscious level in my mind, I'm like, oh, that's totally fine. But then on a felt sense in my body, I'm like, I don't know. I'm still not totally sure if it's fine.
Yeah.
And those come from just young experiences and young imprinting. So when you're imprinting is like just kind of subconscious things that you hold based on what you learned growing up repeatedly. So if you think about your upbringing, however many years you were ingrained, like, this is bad.
Yeah.
Those are your most formative years. And so that's just kind of in you. And then as you get older, you can start to, you know, join different, like, more liberal communities or something and start to have more input and be like, wow, it's not bad. That's really awesome. And that's more of a change in your brain. And so it takes time for, like, the body to catch up with the brain. That's the way I think about it.
Yeah.
Because the body is the part that is holding, like, subconscious material. I mean, the brain is subconscious, but there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I referenced that in the other Q&A,
but... I don't think so. Mother said it's really heavy.
That one's pretty heavy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting book about just how trauma is stored in the body. And you could almost... be just unaware that it's there until something happens that kind of uncovers it. So, yeah, I think it's definitely workable. It's like, I think it's about positive reinforcement as well. Like, letting yourself feel like it's okay. You know what I mean? Like, it could be something if you feel, you know, grimy after making out. It's like, do you feel like you feel more grimy if you think about, like, what would my mom think? Or if you're just, like, in your own experience afterwards, you're like, ah.
Yeah. Is that a question or what I should ask myself?
Well, I guess I'm asking you. And if you need to ask yourself, you
can. I think it's, like, I feel, and I don't even know if it's grimy or if it's, like, if you make out with someone outside of a relationship, then it's, like, you are, like lessening your worth or something.
Hmm.
And it's not my mom who has ever said that. I think that it is just, like probably things that I was, like, taught in church. Like, abstinence. Like, I remember, like, one day we all made it. It was, like, one day at Sunday school where we all took, like, a sacred oath together to, like, remain abstinent. And it was, like, this huge ceremony. And it, like, we might have, like, all got a ring or got something. And it's just, like, how are you going to... You're saying, like... make a sacred oath with the Lord who, like, created the entire earth, because, like, you hooking up with someone is, like, an ultimate sin. And, like, I mean, obviously you're not even going to be worthy. I don't know. It's just, like, a lot.
It goes deep. It goes really deep.
Especially if you're young.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. I feel like there is just, I could talk about this for hours.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think a lot of people that I've heard who grew up super religious, specifically more Christianity based, because there's just, I mean, not even only Christianity based. I've just talked to most people who grew up, yeah, like Catholicism or Christianity, because those religions specifically tend to put a lot of shame around sex and sexuality. I mean, yeah, the fact that homosexuality is still, like, completely a sin.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a big deal.
Really hard for me because my dad's gay, so.
So it's a lot of mixed messages, like, yeah, from your family. Totally.
Okay, I don't want to talk about myself anymore. So this is about you. What would you say is your life mission statement?
Wow.
We like to just throw that one out.
My life mission statement, like, things I live by? Words I live by?
Sure.
I really try to prioritize joy. And I guess I've realized that that's kind of, like, the point of being alive. And I like to experience joy in the little things, like food, like eating food and really, like, just being blown away at how good things can taste. And also, mm-hmm. like, the other day I ate a peach and I was just like, oh my god, like, a peach. Like, this just grows here naturally. Like, this just exists for us to eat and take pleasure in. And that's a huge part of my work too, I think, is just, like, giving people permission to enjoy. My business is called Follow Your Desire, and I just think, like, we were talking about this yesterday, like, there's so many things that we do just because we think we should. And it's like, we're not even sure where we got that idea. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, society-based, or maybe growing up, we got that message. And it's like, when we really start to break out of it, we're like, wait, why are we even doing that?
Yeah.
And so I think for me, like, I receive a lot of joy in working too, which is cool. It's like, if I'm going to be spending all my time doing this thing, I may as well enjoy it. And that's kind of how I got into this realm too, with teaching Spanish and also doing this coaching. And so, I don't know if I were to put it in a statement, something like, I'd like to enjoy the little things.
I like that.
Thank you.
You really do. She really does like savor life, I think. And we were talking about how whenever someone tastes something that we make, we really want a good reaction from them. Mm-hmm. And Lindsay gives like the best reaction. Like sometimes they even take like longer than you think they need to.
What the reaction?
Yeah. Like last night, one of her roommates made this like, well, first of all, the snow came out of nowhere. So like her roommates flocked to all these farms and got all of these crops and like helped to cut stuff for the harvest. I'm not like a plant talker, but so they have all this like these fresh vegetables that I'm assuming are like organic and all these other things that people in Boulder really love, which are great. But he sliced the skin of a zucchini and like he baked it with some goat cheese and like a walnut or something, and Lindsay like moaned about it and like savored it and like closed her eyes for like a minute and a half. And like, I don't know, also before like we eat, she like says what she's grateful for, which isn't like really a prayer, it's just like nice
a prayer for me,
like, yeah, but not a prayer for Lindsay, and it's a nice, I don't know, it's just like, it's nice to see people like take the time to like really appreciate things rather than just like rushing to get their meal down and all that jazz.
Yeah, I agree.
And also she laughs a lot and she touches people a lot in a good way when they consent.
That's me.
So it sounds like you're living your mission.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, life is still a struggle. I don't know. It's like I keep feeling like I'm going to reach this point where I'm like, oh, it's just like not a struggle anymore. But it's like every day is different.
Yeah.
I can have, you know, I try to like just feel really grateful. Although, I mean, not like I try to feel. I do feel grateful all the time. But I actually set reminders in my phone every 2 hours to say what I'm grateful for.
Every 2 hours?
Yeah. I don't always do it, but it goes off. It says gratitude.
Wow. I've heard people do that, like write down 3 things a day. But every 2 hours is a lot.
Just to think about, you know, I don't have to do anything about it, but it's like, I don't know. I don't think there's ever, I don't believe there's anyone in the world who's actually just happy all the time or just living like this life that they're portraying on Instagram.
Yeah.
Even if they say they are, they're just not. It's not true. And so I think, I don't know. I don't know what it would take for my life to be better than it is, because I think it's always going to be the present moment, and we're always going to come up with things to complain about or not be super happy about. And so, so it's pretty good.
Amen. Well, since we do have something to complain about all the time, would you want to mention a shit corner, which is something like recently that happened to you that you just like want to vent about if you have this opportunity?
That's the thing you do on this podcast?
Yeah.
A shit corner?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Or you can choose not to and be the first person in history who decided to not do a shit corner.
In history?
Yeah.
Did Joe do it?
Yeah.
I have to think.
See? Look, this is proof that she's truly trying to enjoy life if she can't think of one shit corner. It can be anything. Like, it doesn't have to be. It can be, like, something huge in society, or it can be, like, a little shitty thing that you wish kind of went a different way.
Well, COVID's pretty shitty.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, well, oh, let's see. Well, something that felt kind of shitty was, I don't know, this whole social distancing thing is hard, and we've been pretty good about it, but recently I've been not so good about it, and, I mean, what is it good anyway?
It's like, yeah.
It's decently stable in Boulder, so I haven't been super worried about it, but then a few weeks ago I did go to some rager parties, and I know it's supposed to be a secret. But whatever, they were really freaking fun, and I felt really great about them. Yeah. So anyway, next week I'm going to see my family in Georgia, and my parents are strictly social distancing. I mean, they're not seeing anyone, and they're wanting me to stay with them. So I'm really
I'm trying to be more socially distant this week, but I also just don't know that it'll truly happen. Anyway, the shitty thing that happened was just that some of my friends, I've been like in their close circle in terms of like being able to come into their house, and I don't know, I might not be able to go into their house again now because they're cracking down. So, I'll tell you something else shitty is that we have mice in our ceiling.
Oh yeah, I heard them last night for sure.
Yeah, I've killed probably at least 25 mice in the past few months, and it really sucks.
Yeah, they actually have like a running tally downstairs.
Upstairs.
Oh my gosh. Upstairs. Okay, so the good thing that I think you might like this follow-up to Shit Corner is an inner tickle. So something that, even though that was shitty, there's like good that can come out of it, or just another like good happy thing that you can think about instead of that shitty thing that outweighs the shit.
Oh.
Well, it's funny because living in this house, it's like so freaking amazing that it almost feels like it makes sense that we'd have mice. It's like, you know, a house can't be 1,000% perfect, I guess.
Yeah.
It would be cool if we didn't have mice, and then it would be closer to perfect. We also have this really bad banging sound. I don't know if you've heard that. Like, when we turn the heat on, there's this huge bang, and it's loudest in my room. So anyway, those two things are, like, shitty about this house, but, like, there it is.
Perfect timing.
Right on cue. But living in this house, I have 4 other roommates, and the quarantine has forced us to really become a family and get along, and we have meetings, and I feel so supported living here. Like, I can just be my true full self, and I can be, like, supported in basically whatever emotional state I'm in, which I'm definitely not used to from life growing up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the norm, I don't think. So yeah. And then also this view is insanely beautiful. There's birds and deer and foxes and
bunnies
and mountain lions and bears up here, and yeah, I think a lot of things about living here just totally outweigh the terribleness of the mice and the banging sound.
And that has been Shit Corner and Inner Tickle. Well, I'm going to be venturing into town to finally explore Boulder, since this is part of the road trip. So, Lindsay, do you have any final words or things that you wish I would have asked, or anything you want to leave with the world?
I think what I want to leave with the world is just, I want to give you all permission to be yourselves. And just because society or your religion or whatever it is says maybe you're a sinner or you're doing something wrong, I just want to tell you that you're not. You're doing it right. And the way that you feel most joy and most fulfilled in your expression is the way you're meant to be. And that's a gift to the world.
That was beautiful. High five to that. All right, we got 2 solid high fives in this room so far.
Nice.
All right, well, everyone, I hope that you'll keep tuning in, because it turns out I'm probably going to continue to interview her roommates, maybe. And if not, I'll be back on the open road sometime. And if you want to tune in to the live stream Q&A, we will link to that. Do you want to drop your social media?
Oh, yeah, I'm social mediaing now. So if you want to work with me, or if you don't, you just want to follow me, I'm on Instagram at followyourdesireLLC. Is there like an @ sign or something I have to say?
It's implied.
Okay. I also have a business page on Facebook called followyourdesireLLC, which is linked to my Instagram, so maybe that makes it easier to find.
Mm-hmm.
My website is lindsayaronson.com, and the easiest way to contact me in terms of if you want to work together is just submitting a form on the contact me page, and I think that's it.
All right, sweet. Well, thanks for being on the podcast and for letting me stay at your house.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Bye, world.